Thanks, Lauren. Need some counselling there, you and Mark. We can make an appointment later on. That's fine. Help them out a little bit. It is a great topic, and it can be seen sometimes as a bit of a funny topic to talk about at church. And so we launched into it last week. It's such an important topic, though, because money goes right to the core of our heart and who we are. It really begins to talk to us about what we believe in and where our faith is. There's a few myths, though, that I wanted to start off with, just to help us to get our heads in the space this morning. So there's often a few myths about church and money. The first one being people don't want to talk about money. And if you were here last week, I kind of dealt with this at the beginning of the sermon by very simply pointing out everyone talks about money all the time. Okay, so inside church is a place that we should talk about these kind of things. It can be sensitive, I understand that, money, sexuality, these kind of topics are quite sensitive in our culture, the rich and the poor, sensitive topics. But church is the place we should talk about these things because everybody's talking about money, even Mark and Lauren when they argue at home. So let's help them out today, shall we? Secondly, talking about money isn't spiritual. And that definitely is a myth. And I really want to walk you through today to show you that it is very spiritual. It really comes to the core of what we believe, what we put our trust in, how we live our lives. And as people who want to follow Jesus, money is one of the greatest opportunities for us to grow spiritually. Provides a fantastic opportunity. Number three, people are going to think I'm greedy. And this is the myth pastors like me have to get over, because when I stand up here to talk about money, the first hurdle and the first concern I have is people are going to think this is an ask for money. This is a maneuver to get more money in the church bank account so we can buy better stuff. And so I can fly first class when I go to conferences in different places, which I never do, don't worry. But it's not about being greedy, and we're not obviously doing those kind of things. Number four, unchurched people will be turned off. And isn't this the big one that we get concerned about? What if someone comes to church and they're not very well churched? They don't understand why we talk about money and the fact that it's all through the Bible. It's just going to be a huge turnoff. I don't want to tell my friends, hey, come to church with me. And the day they come to church, they're looking for God. They're trying to work it all out. Come and hear my pastor. Come and hear us at church. It's a great time. You'll hear about God. And the money series is on. That first Sunday, you bring your friend along and you're like, oh, no. Please, Pastor Caleb, not money or sex or any of those topics on this day. My friend's really interested in God. He doesn't need to hear about our sexual ethics or about our financial ethics. But it's important because God has a lot to say about these things, and we can't be afraid of that. And we have to believe and trust, as I do, as I know many of you do, that God actually knows what he's talking about when he talks about money and these kind of sensitive issues. Put your hand up if you're here last week. Quick, Pastor Pete, just tick the box who was missing. Okay, yeah, we got all that. Great. We spoke about the rich young ruler last week, didn't we? That story that many people know, you may even know that story, even if you haven't read the Bible before. The young man, he's rich, one of the richest men in Jerusalem. He's young. Isn't it fantastic to be young, beautiful, and good looking? I remember those days. And he's a ruler. So he's got power. He's got wealth. He's got everything. And he comes to Jesus, and he also proves to Jesus, and Jesus affirms him, he's actually a really good person. He's following all the commandments. He's doing all the right things. Not only is he rich, not only is he young, not only is he powerful, but he's also good. Jesus says, wow, mate, there's really only one more thing that you can do in order to live the perfect life, in order to inherit eternal life. Sell all of your possessions and come follow me. And the rich young man walks away with his head down, doesn't even reply to Jesus. And the Bible says, because he had great wealth, he couldn't put his trust in Jesus. His money was in his wealth, his finances, his job, his careerism, his aspirations. Remember that Jesus says, sell all your possessions and come follow me. And then what does Jesus say? Because this is what we're going to get into today. He says, and then you'll have treasure in heaven. Let's all say it together. Then you'll have treasure in heaven. Heaven, treasure in heaven. This is what I want to talk to you today about, is the treasure principle. And I've taken a few of my notes today from this book. We can jump onto the next slide. The treasure principle says you can't take money with you, but you can send it on ahead. You with me today? You can't take money with you, but you can send it on ahead. This is the treasure principle. Today, I am going to give you, from this book, which has taken its principle from the Bible, I'm going to give you the best money advice you will ever receive. I'm going to give you the most insider trading type investment advice, the best you will ever receive. It will set you free financially. It will set you free when it comes to money and work and possessions and all of those things. And it will set you free spiritually. It's the treasure principle. You can't take it with you, but you can do something with it. You can send it on ahead to somewhere else, to somebody else. Who thinks this is a good idea? Who's interested in this? Does anyone really want to understand this? Would anyone like this book? All right, Lauren, you get it. You got it. If you're not up for it, you don't get it. Lauren, you got to give me star jumps or something, though. The treasure principle we're going to talk about today, and what's in that book, and I'll put a link in the newsletter this week to four different books that I recommend you should read. The other one's called The Richest Man in Babylon, which is not a Christian book, but one of the best books on wealth creation. In World War II, talking about Anzac Day, and I've got my little pin on today, there's an incredible story about Oskar Schindler. Have you heard the name of the movie Schindler's List? A really well-known movie, one of Steven Spielberg's greatest movies. Some people think one of the greatest movies ever made. And in this movie, it tells the story of Schindler, who was a German member of the Nazi Party. And at the beginning of the war, like most people during the world wars, or many, many Germans, he saw his opportunity to make money. People become very wealthy during wars. They call it blood money. While people are dying, while people are, you know, getting hurt, a lot of people make money. Corruption increases during war. And Schindler began to make loads and loads of money, lots and lots of wealth. We don't like to look there very often, but it's right here inside of us. It's your heart. Your heart is the temperature check on your relationship with money. Most of us will have a relationship with money that was handed down from our parents. If they were anxious about money, you're probably anxious about money. If they argued about money, you'd probably argue about money. If you have a scarcity mindset and worry about lack and worry about not having enough food and worry about having not enough stuff, your parents probably were concerned by those things. If you're good with money, you're good with saving, you practice delayed gratification, which is essential to having a healthy relationship with money, you're probably taught that by your parents. Whatever it is, what you think about money. If I asked you to open up your bank account right now, show me your budget right now, that will quickly reveal to you your priorities. And I don't say the following line to in any way be prideful whatsoever, just as a pure example. The top of mine and Zoe's budget, you will see tithes and offerings to the church, to God, 10%. You will see the next 5% will be money that we can give away to other people. And I have done that since I was 15 years old. You know those ads of like the superannuation, and there's the one guy going up on the lift and the other one going down because one's going to have more super than the other? If you stood next to me next to someone who's 41 years old, I'm the guy going down. Since I was 15, I've given away more than 10% of my money, not because I'm trying to impress God, but because I believe that that is an essential foundation to having a healthy relationship with money. And I want my spiritual life, not my work life, to be first. But I've never suffered. God has always paved the way. Even this week, a doctor let me off $600 off a bill that I should have paid. These things happen all the time, and I believe partly that is because we've learned to put God first with our money. The treasure principle says you can't take it with you, so that's fine. You can detach from it with God's help, but you can send it on ahead. This is Jesus' investment advice. It'd be better than Warren Buffett. It'd be better than George Soros. It'd be better than Scott Papers, the Barefoot Investor, and I'm going to link his book in this week because that's probably the best Aussie book on how to deal with money. Better than investing in BHP shares or CommBank shares, Jesus' investment advice is this. Don't spend your money on earthly things. Spend your money on eternal things. because eternal things reap eternal benefits. Let me show you a little table here this morning. If you invest in earthly things and use your money for that, the Bible's very clear. These things are temporary. These things are material things, so things that you can touch. But this is the foolish way to use your money. If you read the book of Proverbs, it talks about the fool many times and how they use money. When we invest in eternity, we invest in things that have true value, that are everlasting. We invest in wise things. We spend our things on the things that God would spend his money on. And a little sidebar here, we spend the things on things that God would spend his money on. Your money is God's money. If you're a Christian, it's not your money. You're a steward, a money manager. If you can get that principle in your life, which is on your little sheet you've got there, it's one of the treasure principle keys, you will be free. You'll be free in your heart. You'll be free in your bank account. But it's very counterintuitive. I can see it's counterintuitive because of the way some of you are looking back at me. You're like, really, Pastor Caleb? There's a sell coming here. I know there's something at the end here. There is a sell. It's a big sell. I want you to be free financially. I want you to have a great, rich relationship with God. And I want you to use money. I don't want you to not have money. I want you to have more money, but I want you to use it how God would use it. Jesus says, moths eat and destroy earthly money. It fades away. It gets stolen. The main way that money gets stolen from us is we spend it foolishly. It just goes. It slips through our fingers. It actually says that in Ecclesiastes 5 verse 10. This is from the Bible. Those who love money will never have enough. Oh, it says that in the Bible. It's so true. How meaningless to think that wealth brings true happiness. Oh, I thought that was just a self-help tip. No, it's in the Bible. The more you have, the more people come to help you spend it. So what good is wealth, except perhaps to watch it slip through your fingers? Verse 12, people who work hard sleep well, whether they eat a little or much, but the rich seldom get a good night's sleep. The foolishness of building up money in this earth, just so you can have more money, more anxiety, more complications, more employees who don't like you, and more restless nights in bed. The aim of earthly money is YOLO, basically. You only live once. Build it up and spend it. The aim of eternal money, investing in eternal things, is be rich towards God and be rich towards others. Be generous. Send that money ahead. You might remember Jesus talked about the foolish man who built up his money on earth, and he had so much wealth, and he put all of his farming, all of his agriculture, his wheat, he filled up his barns, and he said, great, now I'm finally rich. Now, for us, that can be weird because we don't live in an agricultural society, but for us, that's, I've got my shares, I've got my career, I've got my money coming in, I'm storing, and one day I'm going to have that great holiday, and I'm going to have this great retirement. We're always living for the future time. Do you know what God says to the man who built up his stores and his barn? He says, you fool. You fool. You see, God has a lot to say about money in the Bible. Thank goodness, or else you'd be crucifying me. This is all coming from God. You fool. Tonight, your life is required of you. And the man has a heart attack or whatever, and he's gone. And Jesus, this is in Luke 12. And then Jesus says, you fool, you will die this very night. Then who will get everything you worked for? Yes, a person is a fool, Jesus affirms, who stores up earthly wealth but is not rich in their relationship towards God. Money matters because money impacts the heart. Money impacts where we put our value. The eternal investment has a different mindset. We believe in being rich towards God and others and sending our money ahead. We believe that God owns everything, so it's easy to give it away when God asks us to. If we invest in earth, we often get stuck in what I'm going to call the striver's curse. workaholism, careerism. We strive and we try and we work late nights and we have to manage our money and control our bills and put our kids in the best school and make sure we have this holiday. And it becomes this striving all the time to get more, to spend more, to have more. But it leads to dissatisfaction, unsatisfied, unfulfilled, unhappy. When we do it God's way, we become a joyful, generous giver. And those words kind of seem odd together, don't they? Joyful and giving our money away. But this is the secret of the treasure principle. And even though everything I'm telling you today, you're probably like, yeah, that makes total sense, I suppose, yep. But to get there, to be joyful and to be generous and organize our work life and our money life and our budgets and our bills and everything, that takes a little bit of effort, a little bit of discipline, a lot of putting God first. But to be free in God and to be free of the striver's curse, oh man, to get off the, you know, off the spinning wheel, so to speak, the rat race is amazing. And you know what happens when we get off that wheel and we live for God rather than for money? Our spiritual life flourishes. Most people's spiritual life doesn't flourish because the cares of life, the paying of bills, the buying the next house. Most young families in this room have got a house, but they're thinking of the bigger house with the pool, and they're thinking of the next house that they're going to retire. And it's just the Aussie culture. We're always so aspirational. It's always about the next thing. Yet the Bible is full of be content. Be on the fringes of society. It's fine. Have a little house with a bunch of kids, but be free. Be free to give your money when God says to give it. You don't have to hold on to it all. The striver's curse says this: if I increase in my money, then I can increase in my living standards. And this is the real measure here of your heart. When you get more money, a wage increase, an inheritance comes to you, do you think now I can increase my living standards, better car, better clothes, go on a holiday? Or do you think, I'm going to invest in eternity and increase my giving standards, not my living standards? That challenges me so much, and it's coming out of my own mouth. And I've been looking and thinking about this all week as I prepare for you. It really challenges me. Like, I'm not just pretending. Like, I'm really challenged. I'm worried that God may give me something a little bit extra, and then he's going to say to me to give it away, and I don't know if I'll be able to do it. Because I'm so indoctrinated with increasing my living standards and living this life YOLO. Make money while the sun shines. Make hay while the sun shines. You know, get everything you can now. Prepare yourself for in your 60s and your 70s so you can go on some holidays and spend your kids' inheritance. You know, whatever the mindset is. But if you are really following Jesus and you really understand the principle of money, how God sees it, and then your mindset is always about eternal things and sowing into eternal things, and God gives you money, some of you have a lot of money here and you're gifted with money. God has given you ability to make money. Or he's given you a job that produces a lot of money. He's given you that money not to increase your living standards, but to increase your giving standards, because there's people out there, there's God's will out there, there's things God's trying to do, but he won't do it himself. He gives the money to you so that you can fund the work of the gospel in the community. You can fund this church to go and transform lives. You can give your money and have the ability to help someone who's in need, to help a friend who doesn't have much, to give it to a stranger. I have to buy a badge every year for the Anzacs because I know that the money from this badge goes to people that have fought in wars, that have nothing, that have lost their mind, that have got PTSD. So what's $10 to me? Nothing. I cannot walk past the old man selling the Anzac badges every year. This might cost, I don't know, 50 cents to make. So $9.50 goes to someone who's hurting, who's in pain because of war. That's eternal stuff. That's sowing my money into things that are going to have an eternal impact. This is the great challenge. Let me help you with a little example here. What do you think, which currency do you think is worth more? This is my wallet here. Here we go, here's $20. Which currency do you think's worth more here? I've got $20. If you're listening to the podcast, I'm holding up $20. But I have over $2,000 in Monopoly money. Why are you laughing? Surely the $2,000's worth more than the $20. Is it not? But I got, look at that, 500, 500, 500, 500. I got 20s. Look at that, I got multiple green 20s there. A few hundreds. There's probably $2,500 here. Who wants this? Who wants this? Oh, a few of yous do, don't you? Let me show you another currency. I've got it in here. Tell me what's more valuable than my Monopoly money? What's more valuable than my $20 here? Buy a sausage today for the youth. Is that currency, this heavenly currency, this eternal dollar, is that worth more than $20? Ooh, and some yeses. You're starting to understand the treasure principle, the secret. Man, I hope we got enough sausages today. Because everyone's going to feel super convicted. You're going to be like, I've eaten like, this is my seventh sausage. I'm so full right now for the youth. You're going to be drunk on sausages and sauce today. What about this dollar? Invite your neighbor for dinner. Actually, put some decent food on. Actually, buy a bottle of wine or something, you stingy. No, sorry. Buy a nice bottle of wine. Bring your neighbor over. Build a friendship with them. Let's call this one heavenly dollar. Is this more than the $200 it costs you to put that dinner on? Maybe they've got seven kids and you invite them all over and you feed them and you give them lollies and you buy a special cake. Is that one heavenly dollar worth more than that $250? It is. So you're starting to understand the real value here. What about this? What about this heavenly dollar? Explain the gospel to somebody. This isn't even real money. This isn't even real $20 physical Aussie dollars. Just explain the reason you're a Christian and you follow Jesus. Just explain to somebody, I believe I'm a sinner. I'm wretched. There's something wrong with me. The world's not right. But I believe that Jesus is... who was God, but also a real human, walked on this earth and he covered the gap of my inadequacies and my debt, my anger, my corruption. He covered that gap for me and I put my faith in him, not money. Put my faith in him, not the Australian government. I put my faith in him and not some other philosophy. I've chosen Jesus to put my faith. Everyone puts their faith in something. I put it in Jesus. What is that one heavenly dollar worth in all of eternity? How many times are we chasing this and we miss this? You are rich with friends, rich with family members, rich with the gospel, rich with a good church that will help you. I would sit with you and walk through with you step by step if you asked me to reach your neighbor. Pastor Peter would probably come around to your house and work out a 10-step plan to share the gospel with you. We would literally do that for you. But we don't get asked that very often because we're all chasing this. What about this heavenly dollar? Delete one of your subscriptions and spend that money on someone else. Just give it away. Just give it to someone. Think for a moment, what does someone else need in my family, my friendship group? Buy that $200-$300 thing for them and go without one of your seven subscriptions for a year. That's eternal dollars. You're not going to like this one. Give 10% of your income to the church. Follow the principle of tithing in the Bible. I know this can be a bit sensitive for people. But this is what the Bible talks about. A principle. Now, we don't push this on people because it's not a rule, but it's just a standard, a principle that you can follow if you want to, and you're going to invest in kids' church by doing that. You're going to invest in the youth group by doing that. Olivia gets paid to be a youth pastor. That money comes from somewhere, comes from people who believe putting their money into eternal things. Set up your income to spend 10%. Give it to God. You're not giving it to me. You're not giving it to us. You're giving it to God. You're giving it to the churches of Frankston. Our money goes to all different places, not just in here. Or maybe like Schindler, you can save a life. Share the gospel. Lay down your life for someone. Who knows? Maybe literally. Maybe figuratively. Money reveals our heart. In the Message, so this is a different version of that same scripture I shared before, it goes like this. Matthew 6:24. It's obvious, isn't it? The place where your treasure is the place you will most want to be and end up being. Our heart is a temperature check. Money is a temperature check on our heart. Just like I put my meat probe into my steak to check that it's 50 degrees internal temperature because I like it about medium rare. So God uses money like a meat probe, and he just sticks it a little bit into your heart and just checks the temperature on how much you really believe in him, how much you really believe in the gospel and in sharing it with other people and on saving many lives. Our money follows our heart. That's the reality. Our money, your bank account, your budget tells you your priorities, tells you what you believe in, tells you what you value most. Just like your calendar does, just like your schedule does, it shows you what's a priority for you. So many people miss church, miss life group, miss gathering together with the people of God because there's a shift at work or there's a chance to make some money on a Sunday morning. And I'm not saying that's wrong, and I'm not saying if you're not in church every Sunday, you're going to burn in hell. That's not saying that for sure. But I'm just saying, money will always be in competition with your spiritual life. And yeah, you might come and sit in the back row and you're not a preacher and you're not doing anything super duper. But when you sit there and worship, this city of Frankston changes. When you attend church on a Sunday morning and just sit there and do nothing, you are saying to the 500,000 people that live around here, there is a God. And rather than go out to brunch, I'm going to worship that God with other people that believe in that God. You are evangelizing this city just by coming on a Sunday morning and saying, I'm going to take my time to worship with the people of God and say to Frankston and Cranbourne that there is a God and that we take time out of our week to gather together and say there is a God and worship that God and talk about that God and hang out with people who also believe in that God. You are shining God's eternal light into dark places just by coming here this morning and worshiping a little. But when we think earthly investment, we don't think like that, do we? We think time, energy, resources, sleep, But when we think through eternity, we begin to see through God's eyes. Oh, when our little church gathers and the churches around Frankston gather on a Sunday morning, God is moving. Yes, he is. He moves through our worship. He moves through our prayer. Money matters to our heart, because in our heart is aspirations for our career. In our heart is our possession and it's in our clothes and our toys and our gadget and our houses and that renovation that we want to do. In our heart is access. This is a big important thing for Western people, access to entertainment. Money is access to that sporting event, to that band I want to see, to that restaurant that we want to try out, to that expensive thing that we want to go to. Money gives us options for entertainment, and it's very important, very close to our heart as Aussies. Oh, to think you couldn't go to the footy, or you couldn't see that band, or you couldn't try that restaurant. It would be like, oh, it just offends my heart. Because money is close to our heart. Oh, well, God won't matter if I don't put some money in and other people give and whatever. But man, I've never eaten at this restaurant. That's the reality. Jesus said it. It's either money or it's God. Money shows where our heart is. The spiritually mature are always financially mature, as indicated by their generous giving. You cannot be a mature follower of Jesus and have a poor relationship with money. And you will never have an ungenerous, poor relationship with money and grow into a mature leader, a mature Christian, a generous Jesus-like looking person that people look up to, money will always follow. Think of Zacchaeus. Jesus comes into his house. His heart's convicted. What's the first thing that he says? I want to pay back those I've stolen from four times the amount. Jesus never said anything about his money, but his natural heart response was money needs to follow this. Real money needs to is going to prove that my heart has been changed. Money is close to our heart because it offers us significance. The desires of our heart means that we need money to feel significant. This is why it can be difficult. I'm just trying to choose one angle here. There's many angles, but just one angle to help us understand why the heart and money are so closely connected. The desires of our heart are often disordered, and that's why we invite Jesus to come into our heart to order our loves, to order our desires, to get them in the right order. When Schindler began in the war, he had the natural response that most human beings would have. He took money where he could. He took deals behind backs. He built his wealth because of the war. This is what we do. Impulse buying, hoarding, get stuff, aspirations, bigger, better, buy more, greed, selfish, my family, I've got to pay for my kids, pay for the bills, you know, provide for the family. You can't think of other people. Everyone's got to just look after themselves. This is the natural response that we have because our heart is disordered and money reflects back to us like a mirror what's in our heart. There is only one person that can rightly order the desires of our heart, and that's Jesus. Let me read this scripture to you quickly from 1 Peter. Praise be to God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In his great mercy, he has given us new birth. That means to become a Christian, salvation, into a living hope. Everyone say living hope. It's not dead. Through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. That's why the hope we have is not made up. Christianity isn't a fantasy or a story. It's not the same as the Easter Bunny. It's not the same as Santa Claus. We have a living hope. Jesus is alive right now and into an inheritance, verse 4, that can never perish, spoil, or fade. This inheritance is kept in heaven for you. Treasure in heaven. Our very salvation, the reason we're here today, because the central belief of Christianity is that Jesus rose from the dead. He's not dead, he's alive. And that salvation and hope is also kept for us in heaven. It's not material, it's not passing away, it's not temporary, it can't be stolen, it can't fade. This Jesus deals with the disordering in our heart when it comes to money. The way to be successful with money as a Christian is not to try harder, try and give more, try and tithe more, be better, discipline harder, go home and rewrite your budget this afternoon. That is not the message of Jesus. The message of Jesus, the message of Christianity is follow Jesus. Understand your salvation is an inheritance. Does an inheritance cost you anything? Nothing. It's freely given by God to you. You can't be a Christian because you earned it. You can't be a Christian because you bought it. It's freely given to you. And when you understand the free gift of God, it cost me nothing. It cost God everything. Therefore, when it comes to money, I have no money. I have nothing. I've bought nothing. I'm not smart enough. I'm not that position at work. I'm not that significant thing that I think these shoes give me that significance or this house gives me this feeling. I'm not any of that. I'm just a son of the living God who's my Father in heaven, who's given me an inheritance of salvation. And therefore, whatever you want me to do with my money, Lord God, be it according to your will. That's what a child of God can do when it comes to money. Let's finish this morning with a couple of practical tips because I teased you a little bit last week with five practical tips, five pieces of wisdom taken from the Bible, all starting with G. So we've got, can we have that slide up, please? So we've got get giving generously. We've got get out of debt, get a career, get a plan, and then get an asset. So five G's there. And I explained to you last week that all the research I've done on money over the years and all the teaching I've done, if you were here in 2017, we did 14 weeks on wealth creation, and that series, you know, transformed people's lives. I still get emails from people saying that, you know, I bought a house out of that and that helped me and shifted and whatever. So we know a thing or two about money. We've preached about money. We've done a lot of research, courses, whatever, on money before. But everything I look into, the generosity comes at the end. You know, Warren Buffett, now that he's worth billions and billions of dollars, gives most of his wealth away. But that came at the end of his life. Most financial books will say, and when you get to that point of wealth, then start giving it away, because it's more meaning to give than to. Don't you hate Christianity, though? It's the other way around. This is how you know it's God. Because none of us would think of this, would we? Let's put giving our money away first. What? But I need to eat. I've got bills to pay. I'm in that period of life where you're like, man, it just never ends. Gymnastics, school fees, four kids. It's like just nothing. There's just nothing left. It's like literally most of it's just gone to bills and stuff you have to pay for. And I'm sure many of you are sitting there feeling like, Pastor Caleb, like, I can't see much movement here in the budget. But that's the whole point. That should push you to your knees. God, why am I spending 100% of my income? There's no generosity in this budget. There's no faith in this budget. You know what faith is? It's the gap where we can't control. We don't know. We don't have enough. We already gave our 10% tithes. We already sowed $5,000 into some charity. We already let someone live in our house or had people over for dinner who we're building a relationship with. The money's gone, but the bill needs to be paid. That's where faith comes in. That's actually what God wants. That you can't actually work your budget out properly, so you have to pray. God, give me money. Give me insight. Help me with an investment. Show me how to get a pay increase at work. Show me how to cut down my budget. Teach me to put you first, God. Can you understand? Giving generously has to be first. Or else you're not really, I can't give you advice. I'm just giving you self-help advice. Not Christian discipleship. So get, not as in attain, but get. Understand. Be rich towards God. Understand giving generously from an eternal perspective. Because from an earthly perspective, it doesn't make any sense. That's why it's not of this world. But it's eternal. Get giving generously. Proverbs 22, verse 9. The generous will themselves be blessed, for they share their food with the poor. You can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. That's the principle. Number two, get out of debt. I'm going to give you a little bit more today, but I'm going to be really quick. So if you want to go back, look at the slides, go have a look at them. Get out of debt. The principle here is free yourself from bad debt by delaying gratification. It's very simple, very difficult. Very easy in a sentence, very hard in reality, because it hits on your emotions and your significance and how you were brought up as a kid and everything. But if you're in bad debt, credit cards, that's pretty unchristian. Car loans, I look very poorly on car loans. Good debt, loan for a house, I have that kind of debt. I've never paid 1 cent on credit card being over. I've never had a car loan. I'm not saying they're evil, I'm just saying. Don't think they're good debt. I don't think getting in debt for a liability is smart. But this is the principle here, and this is why get out of debt is important. I don't buy clothes on credit, on Afterpay. I buy clothes when I have 80 bucks and I can buy that pair of jeans. This is the problem, though. It requires delaying gratification. The absolute essential character principle to being good with money and to being godly with money is being able to delay gratification. If you can't do it, you'll never own a home. They say, oh, kids can't own a home these days. What? That's absolute BS. Sorry to use that language in church, but that's absolute BS that a young person can never own a home. They 100% can. It just might take more years than it took their parents. But if you save,
little by little, eventually you will have a deposit. There is a way to do it. But maybe you won't buy a house at 22 like my parents did. Maybe you won't buy a house at 27. What was I? 25 I was, 26 when I bought my first house. But you might buy a house at 32. But you'll have to delay gratification in order to create wealth. And you'll have to get out of bad debt and stay out of bad debt and live within your means and put a lot of money into savings. But over 5 or 6 years, you'll be able to save a deposit. And there'll be, I 100% guarantee you, when you're ready, there'll be some kind of government grant to help you at that point, and you'll be able to get into a home. But you'll never do it if you can't delay gratification. Number three, get a career. The principle here is contribute value to your community through work. This is an eternal perspective. I get a job, I get a career, so I can go out and bless my community. I can sow into human beings. The earthly perspective is I get a job to get me money because I live for the weekend. Like it or not, that's basically the Aussie culture. I do the hard yards for 5 days so I can have fun on the weekend, or I can go on that holiday, and that 1 week holiday a year, that's what I'm living for. We have these ridiculously poor goals that give us a tiny bit of happiness, but guess what? We all know, don't we? It fades in a second. But when you approach work and your career and money with an eternal perspective, as I'm going to use my job that God has given me in order to reach people, bless people, serve people, give something back. It will change the whole entire approach to work. Number four, get a plan. So you've got giving, you've got out of debt, you've got a career, not just a job, a career. You're actually contributing some kind of skill and giving something back. Now you've got to have a plan. The principle here is increase your standard of giving, not your standard of living. I know that's not what we really want to hear, but when you put your budget together, put it together not to live a certain way, put it together to give a certain way. This is what will set you free. Proverbs 12:11, dishonest money dwindles away, but whoever gathers money little by little will make it grow. Because when you have a plan, it doesn't matter if it's only a little, if you have a plan, it will grow. About a decade ago, I started putting aside $10 a month for each of my children. Not very much money. How much money is that over a year? $10 a month. $120 per child. Not very much money. What happens when you turn that into a decade? $1,200 a child. Times four. $4,800 a child. Do you think I just sat in a bank account for 10 years? Buy some blue chip shares. They're always going to make you money. If they're blue chip, and you hold on to them for a decade, they'll always make you money. So that $4,800 turns into twice as much, 10 grand, 12 grand. All of a sudden, there's 12 grand sitting there from basically doing nothing. If they need braces at 15, there's money there. If they don't end up spending that money as a teenager, put it towards a car when they're 18. By then, they could have 5, 6, 7, 8 grand each. I don't know. And that's just little old Zoe and me not doing anything special, not earning anything special, just $10 a month. Would you notice 10 bucks a month? No one's going to notice that. It's not even a sacrifice. That's the principle of having a plan, is you can get somewhere with your money and you can get somewhere with your generosity if you give it time. We'll skip the next couple of slides. Let's go to get an asset, the final one here, and then we're going to pick up that little sheet there. I'm going to pray over that in a moment. The principle here is to become a gifted giver, a supplier for God, for church, for others. I met with the Anglican pastor in Clyde the other week, who planted a church there about 18 months ago. I just wanted to hear his story about how he planted this church. And he stepped out in faith, and he didn't have much money, and he didn't have many people, but he stepped out in faith and he started a church. Incredible story. A donor came along about 12 months into the church and gave them $180,000. Over 3 years, so it's going to get like phased in over 3 years, $180,000 to help them pay for wages, pay for rent, and get the church going. Who would like to be in that kind of position one day? That you could be the man or woman who sees a need in the kingdom of God and has the gifting, maybe because you've developed the skill over many decades, or maybe because you just have a job that gives you, is you're gifted, so you get paid a lot. Or maybe you're just gifted in investing, so you've been able to build up a lot. that there's a genuine need where the gospel is being preached in a new area like Clyde. There's a young guy who doesn't have that money, doesn't have any money, probably doesn't even understand money, but you can come in and go, here, let me give you 3 years in advance so you can do the work of God and not have to be conscious about money. Every one of you sitting here in this room could be that person. You could fund the work of God. If you save little by little, if you were generous with your money, if you built up your wealth and had a couple of clever investments, by the time you hit your 60s or 70s, you could easily be in a position to pull 100K, 150K. Maybe that could be your life work that no one even really knows. But one day as an old man, you just invest in some young guy that's going to plant some church, eternal, that's going to meet, pastor some families, eternal value, that's going to see some people come to salvation and get baptized, eternal value. Maybe you will die and not even know what happens with your money. But when you get to heaven, you'll realize, I built up all of this treasure in heaven. And then what Jesus said will become true of you. Even those who seemed the least or seem the last are actually greatest in the kingdom of heaven.